And it is great to have you with us on the Big Sports Breakfast this Wednesday, the 29th of June. It's a new team this morning. Phil Moss joins us alongside myself and Jamie Rogers. Good to see you, Mossy.
Great to be here, Ryan, Jamie.
Good to hear you, I should say.
I feel like I'm in the presence of greatness.
We love having you on the show, Mossy. We can do plenty of football chat and just get your insights into so many different sporting arenas. So it's great to have you here.
As long as we have a laugh, I'll be happy.
Well, we've already had a laugh because you didn't know how to turn on your headset. So we had a great start in here. Nick had to come running in and turn you on. So
you're hearing everything okay, Mossy? We can hear Mossy okay. That's the main thing.
I am. I'm a bit worried about the last line from Jamie. Nick came in here and turned me on.
I know. Poor choice of words.
Has that ever happened, Nick? I don't. You know, I shouldn't be so cruel, should I? But good to see you, Mossy. And a morning where there is football, live football happening with the Matildas kicking off in about 22 minutes. It's going to be interesting after what we saw against Spain the other day, a 7-0 thrashing. So they'll want to bounce back in some way, shape or form. I don't think we'll beat Portugal with the side that looks like it's going to take the field, but we certainly want to see a better effort.
We certainly do. That was a disaster, really, on many levels. Not just the fact that we had a clutch of star players pull out just before this window, and whether that was part of the plan or whether it was sprung on Tony Gustafsson, I don't know. But if it wasn't part of the plan, why wasn't it part of the plan? And if it was part of the plan, why are we taking on Spain and Portugal? Because that does nothing. You know, Tony Gustafsson said we needed to get some answers to some questions. Spain and Portugal, Spain, you know, heading into this Euros, probably not the opposition you want to learn some questions about players who have never played at that level.
What did you make of Tony's comments where he said that he was surprised that we are all surprised that Matildas lost 7-0 to Spain, and basically were saying that there's no depth in women's football and we all should have been expecting to be thrashed by Spain. What did you make of those?
Look, I understand where Tony's coming from as far as making a statement that proves we need more depth in this country. But to say we haven't got the talent, I disagree with that. I think we haven't got the opportunity. There's not enough games for players to play, men or women. And that's something that I know the APL are looking at, and I think there'll be some announcements maybe even today on that front. But I don't think there was much surprise that we lost, that we got thumped by Spain. I think anyone who knows their football knows Spain are heading into a Euros, and we're not. And we've got a World Cup that we're hosting, and our best players were resting for this camp. So I don't think there was surprise over the result. I think there was more surprise over why would we take on the powerhouses of Spain and Portugal when we're severely understaffed.
So how would they lift for today? Because you come off the back of an absolute belting. What needs to have changed in order to not have a huge repeat of what we saw against Spain?
Well, I think social media, the media will have taken care of a lot of that, because you go into siege mentality and it sort of galvanises the Aussie spirit that we have, that we all are well known for around the world. I think we'll have done Tony Gustafsson a favour as long as he harnesses that with the players, because that is the Aussie spirit. When we're backs are to the wall, we come out fighting and punching and scratching, and I think that's the sort of performance we'll see this morning. But again, we've only got a couple of players who really are holding the fort for what the team will probably look like when the World Cup comes around.
Yeah, a lot of outs. Sam Kerr, Hayley Rasso, Caitlin Ford, Kaya Simon, Steph Kate Lee, Ellie Kerr, so six debutants as well. So that's it's a very inexperienced side. We'll see how they go. That kicks off at 6 a.m. this morning. Now, overnight, a pretty good result for the Aussies at Wimbledon. In saying that, though, there's an asterisk beside it, because Nick Kyrgios was at his petulant worst in winning his first round match at Wimbledon. He abused a line official. He copped a warning from an umpire.
He spat
blew up
at a
about
spectator.
The grass. Yeah, spat in
well,
the direction
spat towards
of a spectator in, I guess, frustration.
Calling an umpire a snitch, like, is that, you know?
Well, he said because the linesman had basically gone running to the umpire to say that Nick had said something on the backcourt, and Nick denied that he actually said anything. But he's also come out and said the reason why he was, you know, spat towards that fan, which wasn't necessarily condoning what he did, but he's just said social media has destroyed the fan base. He said that people feel the need that you're a keyboard warrior and you can then bring that behavior as a fan and just hurl abuse at athletes. And he said that that's got to stop. He said he can understand you can have some sort of argy-bargy, but the abuse that he copped, he said, was just unacceptable.
Yeah, but other players aren't doing what Nick is doing. That's the thing.
I'm not condoning his spat towards a fan, but he did come out to say that this is – and he also has been very open about the mental health struggles that he has had. And he just said he's had a tough period. He's copped it a lot. And I guess they just pushed his buttons a little bit too much.
He was a hot favourite in that match, but he really struggled to win it. He won in five sets. Alex de Minaur had a bit of an easier time. He swept past his opponent, Hugo Delian of Bolivia. He now takes on Jack Draper of Great Britain. By the way, Nick Kyrgios will take on Filip Krajinovic in the second round. So they're both matches that they should win. A couple of withdrawals, which was interesting in the men's draw. Italy's Matteo Berrettini, who made the Wimbledon final last year, he's withdrawn with COVID, as has Marin Cilic. So what's interesting, de Minaur was actually on track to face Berrettini in the fourth round. So that maybe opens things up for de Minaur, should he go through a little bit deeper into the draw. Jordan Thompson, he won in straight sets over Roberto Buena Carbeas. Jason Kubler scored a big result in straight sets over local Dave Evans. Alex Popperin, he lost in five sets to Hugo Gaston. He was actually favourite in that match. Now, of the Aussies in the women's side, only Ayla Tomjanovic was a winner. She upset Swiss 18 seed Jill Teichmann, 6-2, 6-3. She's into the second round, but all the other Aussie women lost. Zoe Hives, Darius Saville, Jamie Fawless and Astra Sharma, they all lost. Tanasi Kokkinakis, he takes on Novak Djokovic tonight at 10:45. So what a match that's going to be for him. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of eyes on that. Roger Rashid will join us a little bit later, but I know he's already said that that's a battle that he's looking forward to, taking on the world's best.
But just such a great story for him. He's come back from he's had so many tough injuries throughout his career. So it's amazing just to watch him back playing in the big arena again. And that was his first match that he's won since 2017 from the main draw and at Wimbledon. And he's just said he's now just going to look forward to it, be excited, and just enjoy every moment he can now have when he faces Novak.
Rugby league, it's interesting seeing the team lists that are out for this weekend following State of Origin, of course. We were worried about Payne Haas lining up for the Broncos, but he's been named in that side, and there's confidence that he will actually be fit to take on the Cowboys this weekend. He suffered a high ankle sprain in that game in State of Origin for New South Wales on Sunday night. Broncos also get Adam Reynolds back, so that will be a terrific Queensland derby. Luciano Leilua, by the way, will take his place in that Cowboys lineup. I see Luke Brooks, he's going to play in Brett Camorley's Tigers.
What do you
team.
Make of that? It's being labelled as soft, that there was all those rumours that he was going to be dropped, and now he has been named heading into this weekend.
Well, I guess it's the coach's way of saying, well, I'm going to give you every chance to return to some sort of form. Maybe, you know, Brett Camorley being a half as well, maybe he's providing some sort of inspiration to Luke Brooks, I don't know, or trying something new with him. But yeah, the clock's certainly ticking, because with Adam Dewey back, you know, it obviously made things look a little bit dicey there for Luke Brooks, didn't it? But Felice Kaufusi, now, he will not play for the Melbourne Storm. He's actually going to fly to Los Angeles to be with his father, who's been hospitalised there. So that Origin player will not line up. Cameron Munster, he's also in doubt with that shoulder injury that he suffered for the Melbourne Storm. Ryan Pappenhausen, he's been named on the reserve list, so that's interesting as well, ahead of Origin 3. Not that I'm suggesting that Ryan Pappenhausen will probably be called into that squad, but in that game, incidentally, Daly Cherry-Evans and Jake Trbojevic will line up for Manly. But it was interesting with all the talk out of State of Origin 2, with now the plethora of choices that Brad Fittler has at his disposal for the centre spot, with Latrell Mitchell returning this weekend. Jack Whiten is back from COVID. And then, of course, you have the incumbents there that played well in Origin 3. How it's all going to shape up. And it was interesting on 100% Footy, which is a Channel 9 program where Brad Fittler works, that Phil Gould and Paul Gallen both suggested that they're not going to change or they shouldn't change the New South Wales side for Game 3. And if anything, Jack Whiten would be the one to miss out, which I thought was interesting chat.
I was going to say, I wouldn't change it. I think there were seven changes for Origin 2, and boy, oh boy, did it work. And I think the Manly boy, Trbojevic, made a huge difference. So I said after Origin 1, I thought Nathan Cleary needed, and I wasn't the only one, by the way, I'm not professing to be an expert, but from a coaching perspective, I looked at that and went, Nathan Cleary needs more protection. I thought Trbojevic provided that platform for Cleary to have the game that he had the other night, along with others, but he was a high-profile change to the New South Wales Blues side. And what I liked about it, and I'm not suggesting Latrell Mitchell would upset this, but what I liked about the other night was that there were no Cleary had a superstar game, but he's not it's not all about him. I think they got the team dynamic right the other night. Why would you mess with that? I know Latrell Mitchell is a superstar player. I get that, but he's coming back from a period out. I just think they got the dynamic right.
Well, I'm with you, Mossy, and I'd love to get the thoughts from what our listeners think, but they were saying on 100% Footy that Jack Whiten was potentially not going to make the cut for Game 3, which would be incredible because he was so great in Game 1 and he was only out of Game 2 because he had COVID. But suggestions that you would bring Latrell Mitchell into the side, I think would be... I'm not a selector, thank goodness, but I just think when you have been out since April with something like a hamstring injury that has needed so much work, I don't think he's had enough time, one game in 10, to then have to go and play in the Origin Arena, I just think would be too much. And off the back of a winning side, I would be amazed if Latrell Mitchell was then selected and came in and expected to perform. He's a superstar, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that he's not. I just think off the back of such a serious injury where you haven't played since April, even if this weekend he comes out and blitz it on his return, I would just be very surprised if he lined up in
Origin. What I will say to that, it's not as though he's coming back from a hamstring off a ticking clock, so to speak. Mm. He hasn't been able to play through COVID the last couple of weeks. So he's probably been fit enough with that hamstring to play for the better part of a month now. Yes, I absolutely know that fitness and fatigue is a much greater thing at State of Origin level. I just always think, and Mossy, you would know this as a coach, you got to think who the opposition would not want you to pick. And I reckon Queensland would say, well, we can deal with Stephen Crichton. We can deal with Jack Whiten. We have to coach ourselves to plan for a player like Latrell Mitchell. I just think he brings so much X factor, danger, second phase. I think Queensland would not want New South Wales to pick
Latrell Mitchell. Yeah, it's a good point you make, Ryan. It is, because there's the intimidation factor in the tunnel before you even run out, that might give you that 1%, and obviously they're up in Queensland, so it's a home game for them. Really interesting comments from Billy Slater the other night, that just because we're at home doesn't mean we're winning the game. You know, we've got to do the 1%ers, we've got to prepare right and execute the basics on the night. But you're right, it's a good point you make about Latrell Mitchell, but again, I had COVID around Christmas time. I know how long it took me to recover from that. I'm not an elite athlete. Probably wasn't when I played either. But that can have can be a real hangover to get back to peak performance for that. He plays this weekend.
Yep.
How he recovers from that, I think, will be key to whether he's even in the conversation next week.
And also, Mossy, the difference between, yeah, you're fit, but the difference between fitness and match fitness and actually going out there and having to play, and especially in the Origin Arena when we saw how fast it was in Game 2, surely that would play in as a factor as well.
Yeah, but these league players only have to play a few minutes these days, don't they, with interchange.
Well, as Berkey was saying, they go and have half time. They have a rest.
Now, I just want to say to a lot of our listeners as well, there's a number of you texting in that the Tab app is still not working, and we understand your frustration with that, and we do apologise. We are aware of the issue. We are still working on it, and it is just a Tab app problem. So what I could suggest to you, that obviously if you don't feel like you want to listen to it on the radio, you want to listen to it through, I guess, the better quality app or something similar, go to, on your web browser, skyracing.com.au, and there is a feature on there where you're able to listen to the same quality audio that you normally listen to on the app, and that way you will be able to listen to the program. So apologies for that, listeners. We are aware of it, and our techs are working on the issue, and hopefully we will get to it as soon as we can. This is the Big Sports Breakfast. Give us a call this morning as well, 1353 53 53, or SMS 0419767272. We'll be getting through those throughout the morning. We're going to take a break. On the other side, we'll have the newspaper headlines. Well, let's start with the Daily Telegraph, where Paul Kent writes a really interesting article that I reckon you'll be interested in, Mossy, as a former coach, where he says, clueless coach-killing clubs prove they refuse to learn from their mistakes, and that Cameron Serraldo and Christian Wolfe are proving too smart for struggling clubs who are clinging to the next man up philosophy. And it's interesting, isn't it, when you consider now the modern coach. And I guess, you know, a great point with this is Craig Fitzgibbon, who coaches the Cronulla Sharks, that he took his time in not just jumping to the next available job and more waiting for the right system and the right playing group. And it seems as though Christian Wolfe, who rejected the New Zealand Warriors, and now Cameron Serraldo, who rejected West Tigers, seem to be, I guess, playing a similar card.
Yeah, that's right, Ryan. And I think another great example at the other end of the spectrum is Trent Barrett, when he went to the Bulldogs and was set up for failure, really. Mm. And that looked that way before he even signed the contract, just from the outside looking in, and it proved to be correct. So it is a massive decision, especially for Cameron Serraldo, who's making his first leap. Christian Wolfe is the head coach at St Helens at the moment. So he's taken that leap into from being an assistant to a head coach. Serraldo hasn't yet at that level. Of course, we know he's been a head coach in reserve grade and so forth. But it's a massive decision, because if you don't feel like you've got the resources and the support and the systems and structures in place to set you up for success, then what next? You know, if you go into your first role and it's not successful, whether you've made your money or not, it's more about the longevity of your career as a coach and how do you set yourself up for that successful career. That first decision is absolutely critical.
And the pressure that you're walking into as well, Mossy. I mean, as an assistant coach, you don't face any bullets, do you? You really fly under the radar. But then when you take that head coaching role, there is pressure from the get-go, particularly with a club that's trying to go from the bottom up.
That's right, exactly. And if you look at the West Tigers, for example, his boss at Penrith was there, Ivan Cleary. And so, you know, he got a first-hand look at what's in place. Now, whether that's been improved since, you would like to think it has, but it's still not attractive enough for Serraldo to jump.
So this is on the back page of the Daily Telegraph. Bondi Lodge, and this is written by Phil Rothfield. Roosters ready to swoop on, excuse me, prop. So the Sydney Roosters are on the verge of signing Matt Lodge for the remainder of the season for around $100,000 as a way to revive their premiership campaign. As we know, they're currently ninth on the ladder. But Lodge, he quit the Warriors back in May, and Phil Rothfield has said, look, this is going to add some much-needed boost to the struggling forward pack for the Roosters. Apparently some clubs have already been circling for Matt Lodge, but because he needs to be included within the salary cap of around $20,000 a game, other clubs can't fit them in, but the Roosters can because they lost Ronald Volkman and Freddie Lussick to the Warriors mid-season.
And that's another headline that feeds into the first one that Ryan was talking about, because when the owner of the Warriors went across to England to talk to Christian Wolfe about taking the Warriors' job, the first question he would have asked is, well, Matt Lodge, you've just paid Matt Lodge out $700,000 to go and do what he wants for the rest of this season. And that's on the salary cap for next season. So you've already eaten into my salary cap by $700K for next season. You know, that's not setting a coach up for success. So they're the sort of decisions that we're talking about. When the clubs make these decisions, it has a flow-on effect and can affect the attraction, I guess, for coaches to take the role.
And when you look at it, you sort of think, oh, gee, $100,000, that's not much for a first-grade football player. But then you think, well, he's got the $700,000 golden handshake and he's playing at the Roosters. It's a pretty good deal for Matt.
And living on the Northern Beaches.
And he'll be playing at the Roosters, and I reckon we probably would get probably the best out of him because he wants to prove himself to get an NRL contract for next year. Yeah, so he'd probably be a good signing.
Well, the national anthem has been played and the Matildas are about to kick off in that international friendly against Portugal. We'll keep you updated on that throughout the morning. Dick Fain is going to be coming up after 6 o'clock. He'll be updating us on all the American sports that are going on at the moment. Adam Pengelly will also join us just before 7 o'clock. Dean Bulldog Ritchie will talk all the ins and outs for round 16 in the NRL just after 7 o'clock. Stuart Clark will join us after 7.30. The Aussies take on Sri Lanka in the first of that test series this afternoon. It starts at 2.30, and we're hearing that there's been, I guess, a change with Mitch Swepson coming into the side, but we'll talk more about that a little bit later. Brad Davidson will talk racing. Damien Cook, Rabbitohs hooker, will join us fresh after State of Origin as well. Roger Rashid will join us to talk tennis. There's been plenty happening over there in Wimbledon. And Kay Scott, Australian boxer, will also join us. So it is a big, big sports breakfast this morning. We want you to be part of the show. 13 53 53, the SMS 0419 767 272. Phil Moss, Jamie Rogers and Ryan Phelan with you this morning. It is the Big Sports Breakfast. It is great to have your company this morning. And the Matildas have kicked off against Portugal. We're about 5 minutes into that match, and it is still nil all at the moment. Phil Moss is in with us this morning. The lineup, Mossy, what did you make of it? And what are your expectations from what you've seen with that lineup and even so far?
Yeah, well, so far Portugal look like they've had the better opportunities. We're only 5 minutes in, but yeah, Emily van Egmond, who we've just seen on the ball there, is probably the most experienced, along with I think Claire Pokinghorn's in the side. I'm just having a look at the screen as we speak, but yeah, they're going to have to really be on their A game this morning. And Remy Seamson, good to see her getting a start for the senior team, and there's Tamika Yallop as well. So there's a little bit of experience sprinkled through, as we saw the other morning, but this is a big game for the Matildas. They can't afford a big scoreline against them again this morning, because there will be huge pressure on Gustafsson and the team if that's the case.
Just on football, we're hearing that the entire Australia Cup will be played before the start of the new A-League season, with the October 1 final to be the last match of Football Australia's domestic calendar. So we're also hearing today that there might be some announcements, some changes from the A-League just with regards to the women's domestic season as well. So this could be the start of, I guess, maybe a little bit of a shake-up around the A-League and how things look, maybe even scheduling ahead of the World Cup as well.
Yeah, and I think it's crucial. Like, you know, you talk about Legacy 23 as the Women's World Cup has been tagged. For me, the legacy out of hosting a World Cup will be greater opportunity for players and greater opportunity for coaches. And that means more games of football, more teams. They're the sort of things that I'll be looking for out of the end of, out of the back of hosting a World Cup. So expanding the A-League women's season, I think, is crucial, and it has to make financial sense, commercial sense, of course, with the partners at Paramount and Channel 10. But I think it's a step in the right direction, as long as the building blocks have been put in place for it to be sustainable over the longer term.
We'd love you to be part of the show this morning. 13 53 53 is the open line number. Send us a text as well, 0419 767 272. News that Andrew Abdo, the NRL chief, has been disappointed by the behaviour of Victor Radley in the sheds after game two of State of Origin the other night. I'm not sure whether you, the listener, saw what happened or even read about it in the papers, but pretty much what happened was he made a lewd gesture, I suppose, with Joseph Suleali, where he simulated, I guess, how would you call it, some kind of sex act-related act. Yeah. And that was caught on camera, which certainly wasn't a good look. So he's going to seek counsel with Victor for a bit of a please explain. It's disappointing, but in some respects, I know that they know that the cameras are in the dressing sheds now, but, you know, so the locker room also should be a place for the team and a bit of privacy in some respects as well. I see both sides of the argument.
Yeah, I don't know, Ryan. I'm like, you know, the cameras are in the dressing room. Well, first of all, forget the cameras. What are you doing that for?
Yeah,
in
exactly,
the first place,
exactly.
Like, true. Grow up.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, like that's the first point. Second point is, you know, there's cameras around. Third point is, you get caught. Like, the whole thing for me, I'm like, you're a professional athlete. Mm. You've got to respect the position that you're in as a role model. It's a short career. Make the most of it and don't make stupid mistakes like that. But what's the process going through the mind to actually perform the act in the first place. Like, it's just, it's childish. It's
I agree with you, Mossy. It just grow up. Mm. And Ryan, the change room is not a place for privacy because you know that all the cameras are in there. And
yes,
it's part
and
of the
I know
viewer.
There's education. And
no, but
all
as,
of
as
that
the
sort
viewer,
thing,
like, you're aware that we all at home want to see what's going on behind the scenes because we never have access to that. And so that's part of it. You know that we're all at home watching, and that was broadcast to millions of people, that behaviour. Mm. Just stupid. Mm.
Some texts coming through this morning. Morning, guys. The great debate with the Origin team is plain and simple for me. The 46-12 win the boys played as a unit. So why the hell upset the apple cart? Latrell is a star, yes, but geez, it would be a kick in the face to lose someone for him. If anything, Whiten on the bench for Talakai. That one with no name on it. And this one as well. Morning team. Can you believe all the whinging on Munster now and how he hurt his shoulder and the tackle was illegal? It's called karma. Munster's dodgy tackle on Nathan last year put him out of game three. He played the rest of the season with a dodgy shoulder, and history has it still won the grand final on Clive Churchill. So that is karma for Cameron Munster. So, yeah, there we go. So some texts coming through this morning. All right, we've got the first of our guests this morning, and it's time to talk American sport with Dick Fain. Good morning, Dick.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Very, very well. Great to be talking American sports with you. Well, I guess, is it American sport? Because we've got more PGA defections to the new Greg Norman tour, which is, I guess, really throwing some cat amongst the pigeons as far as the golf ranks are concerned.
Certainly is. Carlos Ortiz, Matthew Wolf, the latest two. And when you just look at the PGA Tour and their John Deere Classic, for example, this week, I mean, there is only one player in the top 70 in the world playing in this tournament, and that's Webb Simpson. Now, I know a lot of, and that's only partially the LIV responsibility, because the LIV players are playing in Portland this weekend. That's taking a lot of the people away from that PGA Tour event. But then you also have, you know, everybody's moving over to Europe to get ready for the British Open. There's a big pro-am going on. The JP McManus pro-am starts in just a few days, and then you have the Scottish Open after that. So it's really hurting the PGA Tour as far as their field strength. And it'll be interesting to see how this turns out, because I'm a little bit skeptical that the PGA Tour did the right thing by just simply going hard line and saying you can't participate, because they are losing a lot of talented players. But then on the flip side, how long is this LIV Tour going to last? Is it only going to last a couple, 3 years, because the fact that there's no money being made out of it? Or is the Saudi Arabian government just fine with dumping tens, if not, well, actually, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, because they paid that just to Phil Mickelson and DJ to get him in there. So you're talking about many hundreds of millions of dollars with no plan on financial returns. So that's the fascinating part to me, is what does the golf landscape look like 5 years from now? And I really don't have a good answer for that.
Dick, Phil Moss, great to be speaking to you as always. I'm interested just to pick your brain and get your thoughts about the brand of Greg Norman in relation to this breakaway Saudi tour, because here in Australia, and obviously, you know, well known here as an Aussie, but everything I read and hear and feel, to be honest, is negative towards the brand of Greg Norman in his involvement around this Saudi tour. What are your thoughts?
I think that's probably fair. I think Greg Norman was very popular here in the States. He was my favorite golfer when I was, you know, in my teenage years. Before there was a Tiger Woods, Greg Norman was my favorite guy. I bought the shark hat. I wore my shark hat when I was out there golfing when I was 18, 20, 21 years of age. And, you know, while I don't think this has ruined Greg Norman for me, but I do think it has hurt his legacy a bit. But hey, he's getting a lot of money for it, so it, like all these guys, I mean, does Phil care that it hurts his legacy if he's making $200 million? Does it hurt that does DJ care that it hurts his legacy if he's making $150 million? That's the big question. How much does that money make up for what they're hurting in public image? But it's interesting. I don't think people necessarily in the States are just pointing a finger at Greg Norman and saying, you know, he's the bad guy in this whole thing. I think more of the focus is on the American players that are moving over to that tour.
Dick, we haven't spoken to you since the NBA draft last week, and we had two Aussies in Dyson Daniels who went pick 8, but also Luke Travers who went at pick 56. But first of all, just give us your thoughts on Paolo Banchero that went as draft number, as he was the number one pick. It was a bit of a surprise.
It was a bit of a surprise, and you know, he's a kid that we talked about last week before the draft as going to be, he was going to go 1, 2, or 3. We just didn't know which order, but I did not anticipate him going number one. It seemed like at that point when we spoke last week that it was going to be Jabari Smith that was going to go number one, although Paolo was my favorite of the three, and I'm glad he did go number one. I think, you know, all you got to do is look at some of the comps that that people are saying. I mean, somebody has comped him to Ben Simmons. Another person's comped him to Chris Webber. Can you imagine putting Ben Simmons and Chris Webber in the same body? That would be a hell of a basketball player. And I think Paolo Banchero has the potential to be a, and I don't know about superstar, like top five player in the world type guy, but I do think he is going to be a very, very productive member, you know, double-double type guy for many, many years in this league. And I think he was the rightful number one overall pick. The surprise to me came at number four, where Sacramento, who has had a lot of history not taking the right player. I mean, you just take a look at what Sacramento's done over the last 10 years in drafts. The guy that they picked has been a bust in three different drafts that I can think of. They've picked a bust, and the very next player in those drafts to go, 1 year it was Klay Thompson, 1 year it was Damian Lillard, and 1 year it was Luka Doncic. Mm-hmm. And you can tell me, I mean, you don't have to guess why the Sacramento Kings have not gone to the playoffs for 16 years. Mm-hmm. And they do it again by taking Keegan Murray, who's a nice player, but he's not an upside guy. He's a guy that what you see is what you get. You get a very good shooter, a very smooth offensive player, but you had a guy at Jaden Ivey sitting right there that could be Ja Morant. He doesn't have quite the point guard abilities as Ja Morant, the passing abilities Ja Morant, but his offensive game and his athleticism really remind me a lot of Ja Morant. And so I think that was a mistake. And Jaden Ivey fell right into the lap of the Detroit Pistons. And Detroit has a pretty good, young, up-and-coming team now. They're not going to be able to compete right away for a playoff spot, but probably by 2023-24, they're probably going to be competing for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
And Dick, the other thing before we move on, just with the NBA draft, it was also good to see, just from an Australian perspective, that the NBL had two players that were featured last season, and Usman Dieng, who was pick number 11, and Luke Travers, both spent last year in the NBL. So it just shows that Australian basketball here in our competition is still a good feeder into that NBA draft.
Well, and if you keep having players like Josh Giddey coming over and making a big-time impact in the NBA, that can only help. I mean, you would like to think that NBA scouts look at each player in a vacuum, right? But that's not how it works. If a guy comes over from a country and he dominates, then you're going to look more at that country. And Josh Giddey came over and averaged 13 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. I mean, the guy was a walking triple-double for Oklahoma City, who's got a pretty good young team brewing over there. And so that is going to help the rest of the Aussies in future drafts get drafted maybe higher than they would otherwise get drafted.
Dick, we saw the Stanley Cup wrap up with the Colorado Avalanche winning over Tampa Bay in the series. They sealed that game 6 of the series. But the famous Stanley Cup, which we know that there's a lot of tradition around, they caused a bit of damage to it, apparently.
Yeah, it's not the first time. I mean, the Stanley Cup, as far as trophies go, it's probably the most revered trophy in North America. I mean, I can't think of another trophy in American sports that is revered more than the Stanley Cup. I mean, maybe one of its, you know, it's just because of its size, its legacy. It's been around for over 100 years. And part of the lure to it is the fact that every player gets to take it home, and every player gets to take it to their hometown and show it off to their friends before they pass it off. And there's been some very unsavory things done the Stanley Cup over the years. Some are documented, some are not documented, and I'm probably happy that they're not documented. But yeah, it's not the first time, and it won't be the last that the Stanley Cup gets damaged a little bit.
Now, Dick, Deshaun Watson's legal team take on the NFL in front of a retired judge in court today. What's can you give us any updates?
Well, the NFL wants a year suspension. That's at least a year suspension. That is what they've informed Deshaun Watson as well as the players' union, and they may end up getting it. They're seeing a disciplinary officer. Sue Robinson is her name, and she is going to hear the argument from the NFL. She's going to hear the argument from Deshaun Watson's side, and it's going to be an arbitration situation where she's going to look at it, and she's going to determine whether the full year or a year plus suspension is worthy, or if it needs to be cut down. But we know at this point that the 4, 5, 6 game suspension that was kind of speculated about 4 or 5 months ago, before all these new cases came out of sexual misconduct, that's off the table. I mean, we're definitely talking about a double-digit game suspension at the very least, and it could be a year plus. And I would think that it would come down fairly soon.
And Dick, just one last one from me. My heart sank yesterday when I saw headlines that Brittany Griner, who's the American basketballer currently in detention in Russia, she is going to go to trial on July 1st. And I just wondered what the headlines are over in the US and what the WNBA and I guess your government are doing to try and help her, because this is such a serious and sad situation.
Yeah, there has been conversation with the U.S. government and Russia for the release, and it does not appear like they've made very good progress in that. And the question is, what type of trial is she going to get? I mean, is she going to get a real fair trial, or is she going to get a trial where Brittany Griner is being used as a political piece? And it's very, very unfortunate. The WNBA has really been solid and unified in this and very vocal about bringing Brittany Griner back. We've seen we've seen T-shirts worn before games. We've seen logos painted on courts with her name and initials on it. So I really hope it goes well for Brittany Griner, because she needs to come home. She needs to get back to doing what she loves, and that's playing basketball.
All right, Dick, always great to talk to you, and we'll chat with you next week on the Big Sports Breakfast.
All right, thank you very much. Pleasure.
Dick Fain joining us this morning. Now, just updating you at Wimbledon, Serena Williams is currently on court against Harmony Tan. Now, Serena lost the first set there. Then she won the second set quite easily, 6-1. So it's now into a third set. So watching Serena as she goes for that to equal that record with Margaret Court, of course, her career is nigh, I suppose, before she calls it a day. But she's currently on court there at Wimbledon. It's nil all, Australia and Portugal. 22 minutes gone there in that international friendly with the Matildas at the moment as well. We'll keep you updated. What are you seeing, Mossy?
Not bad. They're holding their own. Portugal have had the better opportunities, peppering the Matildas' goal. Yet to see the Matildas with a clear-cut chance, but defensively they look reasonably well organised. So some good signs early on. But what about Wimbledon? I don't know about you two, but is there a... I know we've got Kyrgios there and blah, 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 but with no Ash Barty, it's just after what happened last year...
And no Roger Federer.
It's just for... But particularly for me, Ash Barty, with that climactic win last year and then the retirement, it's just lost a bit of luster
for
me.
To be honest, if you look at the top 20 for both the ATP and WTA, tennis doesn't look too exciting, as far as personalities at least are concerned over the next few years. I mean, there's a few like Tsitsipas, I suppose, in the men's draw, but we've just been so spoiled by these household names, haven't we, for the past couple of decades, really, particularly in the men's draw, and now Ash Barty as well. Yes, we've got, you know, some Aussies over there doing well. But I agree with you. It's just not the same excitement that it used to be.
It hasn't got the sparkle, has it?
Yeah. Now, we are getting a lot of text messages this morning just about the Sky app. Now, we are aware that the Sky app is not working. We do have our techs on that at the moment. What I would implore you to do is open your web browser and go to skyracing.com.au and you can listen through the Sky Racing website. You can also go to TuneIn Radio. It is working through that particular app as well. So we are getting a lot of text messages. Just want to let you know we are aware of it. There are other means that you can listen to us and stream us online. So hopefully you can find us there through the Sky Racing app, through skyracing.com.au.
We do have a text that's come through. It's from Kev A in Newey. Hi, guys. I saw that act of Victor Radley, in brackets, and he knew the camera was on him and young Suwali. It was on them for about a minute. I think he will be in a lot of trouble, and it just goes to show what we were talking about earlier. You know, Jamie and I went quite hard on grow up Victor Radley, but you just know the cameras are around, and I have to agree with that text. The evidence suggests that text is spot on.
Well, NRL boss Andrew Abdo will play Grand Inquisitor with that particular incident over the next 24 to 48 hours or so. This is the Big Sports Breakfast. We'll take a break for the news, and on the other side in the next half hour, we'll be talking to Adam Pengelly from the Sydney Morning Herald. And of course, after 7 o'clock, we'll talk rugby league with Dean Bulldog Ritchie. Just keeping an eye on that Serena Williams game at the moment against Harmony Tan. It's in the third set, and Serena is up a break 2-1 at the moment. So that's her first round match. We'll see how she progresses. The Matildas are in action in that international friendly against Portugal. It's still nil all at the moment, but Australia had a good chance only moments ago, Mossy.
Yeah, they did. Emily van Egmond found herself in space on the penalty spot. Great cutback to her feet, but she was just caught on her heels a little bit. A massive chance for the Matildas to take the lead. They're holding firm at the moment, 0-0 with 35 minutes gone. But you'll remember the other morning it was 0-0 with 40 minutes gone, and then we collapsed just before and after half time. So fingers crossed we can sustain this performance, because it's a fighting performance.
So we'll watch a little bit closer from about 5 minutes from now is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the Socceroos. Obviously, we're still so excited about the fact that they've been able to qualify for the World Cup. What are you're very good friends with Graham Arnold, of course. What are some of the conversations that you've had with him over the past week or so, since the dust has settled on everything with the Socceroos and now he needs to concentrate on and focus on what is going to happen in the next phase with the actual World Cup itself? And so much has to happen for the Socceroos, and so much has to go right ahead of that tournament before it even starts, with regards to how far forward they maybe move the A-League season, so a lot of these A-League players can get some time in their leagues before that particular tournament. What are some of the conversations you're having with Graham Arnold at the moment?
Yeah, look, first and foremost, you know, he came back and he was mentally fatigued, I think would be an understatement. You know, it was a huge, huge 7 or 8 weeks for him, because he left here, went to England, based himself over there and was watching the players and having meetings and getting face-to-face individually with the players. The amount of work that went into those players that took the field before they even came into camp was quite phenomenal. I think that was the differentiator, getting us to the World Cup in the end. Funny story, just very quickly, I digress, but with Arnie, came back on the Friday, I think. On the Sunday, he was helping me move a couple of couches, or I was helping him move a couple of couches, and we had to do a trip to the tip, Kimbricky Tip. So we're up there unloading this trailer, and I just burst out laughing looking at him. You know, in his old tracksuit and a hat on, and he looked at me. He said, "What are you laughing about?" I said, "Well, if this isn't a penthouse to the outhouse story, nothing is." 4 days after getting us the World Cup, we're at the Kimbricky Tip together, and there's other guys around us laughing, looking at him, going, "I'm sure that's Graham Arnold." Anyway, it was a nice grounding moment. But yeah, look, I think Arnie's real focus is on as many players as possible, getting as much game time as possible. So for two reasons. First of all, they're in the shop window for him to look at. ahead of naming that squad. And secondly, that he's taking a squad to the World Cup that is match-hardened, match-fit, sharp and ready to go. And they've got momentum that you can only get by playing games. Aaron Moy was probably an exception to the rule. How fit he was, his performances against UAE and Peru were quite phenomenal, given that he hadn't played minutes since January. And that's a credit to Andrew Clark, the fitness coach, as well, for getting him that way in one-on-one sessions. So you need all the players fit and firing for selection. And once they get in that squad, ready to go at the World Cup, that's the key.
And the support from the A-League as well, as far as potentially moving the season forward so that they can get more game time, as I mentioned before. But there were a lot of players that weren't released from their clubs to play in that campaign, which really added another degree of difficulty for Graham during that campaign. Hopefully that line opens up a little bit more between the A-League and also the national team.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I know for a fact Danny Townsend and the APL executive are keen to do whatever they can to help Australia perform at the World Cup. They've obviously got their commercial commitments with the A-League and the television rights partners and so forth. But whatever they can do to if they can bring the season forward, I'm sure they'd be looking at that now. There's the Australia Cup, as you mentioned, Ryan, that gets played out before the A-League actually kicks off. So that should be done and won by October 1, I think it is, the final, which is good news. But, playing week in, week out, league football where there's something at stake is absolutely critical to performing at the World Cup.
Mossy, what's happening with Tom Rogic? He left Celtic a month ago. He was offered big money at an Indonesian club, which he turned down. He still is clubless. Apparently, multiple A-League clubs are interested in him. But can you see that he would rather stay in Europe versus coming back here and playing in the A-League? Or have you heard any word of where he might end up or what he plans to do?
Honestly, I haven't, Jamie, and I have spoken to Arnie about this, and even privately I said, look, did he give you anything around why he didn't turn up for camp? And he said personal reasons, that was it. So Arnie came on the show last Sunday and said the same on air, that was the conversation he's had with Tommy. So as I've always said, first and foremost, I hope Tommy and his family are okay, because we don't know any more detail about what those personal reasons are. But from the football side of things, you can imagine that Tommy would want to go to the World Cup. Where that lands is going to be dependent on the conversation he has with Arnie when that time comes, if that time comes. Where he ends up as a club player, I think, is crucial to that. I 29 years of age, I'm pleased that he knocked back Persija Jakarta, even though the money may have been really attractive. I just think the Indonesian league, with all due respect to our Indonesian listeners and fans of that league, it's not at a level that's conducive to preparing one of our top players for a World Cup. So I think if he's got the opportunity to stay in Europe, which I'd be really surprised if he doesn't, I'd still like to see Tommy playing in the English Premier League or Spain or somewhere like that. If he's got the chance to stay there, that would be option number one for me, purely from a football perspective, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
So much of this Socceroos squad, I mean, we talk about the golden era that we've had in previous campaigns, and I know we're far from that at the moment, but where does a player like Rogic stack up? I mean, we've had in the past Tim Cahill, we've had Harry Kewell, so when other sides are looking at, well, who's their star, who's their marquee player, I mean, Do we have one? Where does Tom Rogic fit into that? And is it probably part of our, I guess, appeal with this World Cup campaign is the unknown?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And I think, you know, what got us through into the World Cup was exactly what Arnie was talking about, that DNA, that Aussie DNA. And he was criticised a bit for trotting out that line leading into the last couple of games. But I think he nailed it. I really do. And having Jeff Fenwick come along and talk to the players, I think aligned perfectly with that Aussie DNA and what it takes to get to the World Cup, the big dance. Tom Rogic is our talisman. There's no doubt about that in the current squad, the way it is. Aaron Moy is right up there, of course, as well. I think Martin Boyle is critical to our World Cup, and I know you've got a question for me on that one,
just
Jamie.
Well, you've mentioned his name, Martin Boyle, and I was quite interested, Mossy, when I saw that he's been relegated at his new club. He's moved over to the Saudi Professional League, and it was 13 games after moving from Scotland, and he's now been relegated, which surely isn't great signs heading into the World Cup, or what does he do now?
Yeah, well, look, he came from Hibs, and as you said, his Saudi club, Al Faisaly, have been relegated. Mm. I think that opens the door. My not the cynic in me, my football brain tells me that there's no doubt that Martin Boyle will want to get back to Europe leading into this World Cup. He has been an absolute star for us. He's a critical cog in Graham Arnold's machine, and I think him playing back in Europe will have him best prepared for the World Cup.
Would he go back to the club he came from in Scotland? I know they had a buyback clause, which I guess you could get him cheaper. Do you think he would go back there?
Well, look, that's certainly not off the table. I'd like to see him go to again, with all due respect to our Scottish listeners, I'd like to see him go to a bigger league.
Yeah.
I think Martin Boyle's got the game and the mentality to go to the English Premier League. I'd like to see him go there. I'm not saying he'd start at one of the bigger clubs, but certainly be in the Premier League. You know, we saw the likes of Matty Ryan and Aaron Moy at a club like Brighton.
Yep.
I think if Martin Boyle can find himself an EPL club, gee, what a preparation that'd be for the World Cup.
We're approaching half-time in the Matildas International Friendly against Portugal. We've gone past that dreaded 41-minute mark that you spoke of before, Mossy. We're nearing half-time and it's still nil-all at the moment. But Portugal had a good chance only moments ago, which the girls have been able to thwart.
Yeah, look, they've been gritty, the Matildas, but Portugal's profligacy in front of goal has certainly helped us on a few occasions. We've had one really good chance to Emily van Egmond. Apart from that, we haven't had any other clear-cut chances, but we're holding firm. What are we, a minute plus injury time away from oranges, so a good first half.
A break on the Big Sports Breakfast. Give us a call, 13 53 53, the SMS 0419 767 272. Now, just keeping an eye on Wimbledon at the moment, Serena Williams is on court against Harmony Tan. Williams, of course, in the past has just been so dominant at Wimbledon. She's tied with Steffi Graf with the second most Wimbledon singles titles, with, I think, 8, hasn't she? Has she got 8 or 7? But the last time she won here, of course, was back in 2016. But at the moment, she looks as though she's in danger of getting knocked out in the first round. Harmony Tan has gone a break up in the deciding third set. Interesting, she's wearing black tape. Have you seen the black tape that Serena's wearing on her face?
I'm literally, an article is loading on my screen as
it's
to, about why
for
she's
sinus.
Doing it.
Oh, okay. To stop sinus problems. It looks,
that's interesting.
Remember that singer from the early 2000s, Nelly?
Yeah.
And he used to wear the tape? Yeah, so it looks a bit like that.
Well, I remember Robbie Fowler. Remember Robbie Fowler when he used to wear the tape across his nose to open his
breathing,
nasal passages?
Mm, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that at the moment because Serena in danger of getting knocked out. So, obviously, the former Wimbledon champion, she's eyeing off that title record with Margaret Court, so she may have to wait to the US Open, the way things are progressing at the moment.
It's amazing, though. She's 40, and her opponent is 24. Like, she's still doing so well for
Absolutely. Just updating some of the Wimbledon results, if you missed them earlier. Nick Kyrgios, he was through, albeit controversially, in 5 sets last night over British wildcard Paul Jubb. He carried on a little bit, as you would expect. He even spat towards an opponent, but he goes through to the second round. Alex de Minaur won his match in straight sets. Jordan Thompson won in straight sets. Jason Kubler, he had a big result in straight sets over Dave Evans. That was a big result, which surprisingly hasn't gained a lot of interest in the media, but that was a surprising result. Alex Popperin was a favourite. He lost in 5 sets to Hugo Gaston. Ila Tomjanovic was the only Aussie through on the women's side of the draw. Now tonight, Tanasi Kokkinakis takes on Novak Djokovic. That match gets underway at 10:45 tonight. It's a Wimbledon that's a different feel with Wimbledon this year, obviously, with no rankings points available. They have boosted the prize money. And it's funny when you think about Novak Djokovic now with all the furore that happened ahead of the Australian Open with COVID and all of that sort of thing. And it seems as though it's his tournament to lose again. And you just wonder how the public is sort of trending towards Novak Djokovic nowadays.
Well, he's got that added fire because he won't be featured in the US Open because of the COVID vaccine mandate over there. So he's got that extra fuel to go out there and get the win. But he's just so hated, isn't he?
Yeah, it was really interesting what happened here around the Australian Open with him. But I suppose things like that just add to the script, don't they? And then you look at it and you go, it's probably written in the stars that he takes out the Wimbledon title and gives a big thank you very much to the world who turned on him over that Australian Open situation. But you're right, Ryan. Like I said this a little bit earlier, I'm struggling to get into Wimbledon this year, and maybe it's the Ash Barty hangover from last year her retirement since. Who are the superstars? I remember being a kid watching tennis, and I could rattle off, even as a kid who wasn't an avid tennis fan, I could rattle off probably 10 names of players that I'd turn the TV on to watch because they were characters and you knew that there was going to be a contest. Struggling at the moment.
Mm. So Serena is serving to say in this set at the moment. As I mentioned, she's down a break. It's 15-30 with her on serve at 3-4 in this deciding set. So the pressure is on the Wimbledon champ. We're going to be talking to Dean Bulldog Ritchie about rugby league after 7 o'clock. And we spoke about West Tigers earlier, Luke Brooks surviving the axe, and he will take his place in the side with Adam Dewey still coming back from that injury on the bench, which is, I guess, going to be a source of scrutiny for Brett Camorley, as he is now being suggested as the potential next coach for West Tigers. And these sort of crucial decisions in backing players like Luke Brooks, who are coming under a lot of pressure, it's a telling time for a coach who's, I guess, trying to put his stamp on a side as an interim coach, which wouldn't be an easy thing, Mossy.
No, it's not. And maybe, and I'm not suggesting this is the case, but just a maybe, that, you know, you need to get your big names on side when you're going for the job as well, because you know the board and senior management are going to talk to the players about, you know, how it's going inside the dressing room and what their thoughts are. You know, I'm not suggesting the players get to pick the next coach, but their opinions certainly have an impact. So maybe, you know, showing faith in a player like Brooks is a strategy. Mm. You know, obviously it needs to pay off, and Brooks needs to play well for the Tigers to win games to get Camorley the job. But it could be a ploy behind the scenes.
What would be, I mean, you do a lot with mindset coaching, and obviously as a coach yourself, if you're in an interim role, how would you approach that? Because it's yours, but it's not yours.
Mm.
You want to, I guess, be putting your best foot forward, but then you're sort of mindful of what steps you take along the way. What would be your advice to an approach to handle a role like that, an interim role?
Being interim is a real double-edged sword, because there's no better way to interview for the job than to actually be in the job. But being the interim, you know, you just haven't got that
support.
Yeah, full support or full control, because everyone's sort of dipping their toe in the water a little bit. So it is very difficult, but I think, you know, the ones who go from being interim.
But it's also, I guess, a lot of the players as well think, oh, well, they just defaulted to this guy. It's not like they picked him. Mm. And that mindset is probably attached to some negativity as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And so what my counsel would be for any interim coach is own it. You've got to own it. You've got to step up to the – if you really want that job, whether it's that job or another job you want, you've got time in the hot seat. So you've got to own it. You've got to be yourself. You've got to put your stamp on the team, and you've got to try and find a mindset within yourself that is, this is my role to lose. So I'm going to give it everything I've got for the time I'm in the hot seat and see where it takes you.
All right, we're going to take a break on the Big Sports Breakfast. News is coming up. We want you to be part of the program. 1353 53, the SMS as well, 0419 767 272. Going to love talking rugby league after the news with Dean Bulldog Ritchie. Stay with us.